Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
An anonymous author said, "Nothing looks as good as healthy feels." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who focuses on health. Today's playmaker began his healthcare career in New England. With us today is a CEO who still plays hockey. This great playmaker is Scott Flannery. Scott is CEO of United Healthcare Employer and Individual Operations in North Texas and Oklahoma. United Health Group is a diversified health and well-being company dedicated to helping people live healthier lives and making the health system work better for everyone. In Texas, United Health Group employs more than 15,000 people across 136 offices and serves more than 4.3 million individuals with a care provider network of 514 hospitals and over 67,000 care providers statewide. Scott served as health plan CEO in 2011 through 13. And returned to the role in April 2017 after spending more than 3 years as United Healthcare's Central Region Growth Officer and the Sales National Practice Lead for UMR, where he and his team work with local markets to develop and implement strategies to drive business growth. Well, Scott, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
How did Ursinus College Bear get to Texas?
Well, it's interesting, Steve. So when I graduated from Ursinus, I went to work for Prudential Healthcare and became part of their, what they called at the time, their STAR program, which was a sales training and rotation. Part of that program back in the day, a lot of the healthcare companies did training programs like that. And part of the Prudential program was that you agreed to be relocatable. So when I graduated from the class, my brother was actually playing for the Cowboys at the time. And so I graduated top of the class, and they said, here are the open markets, list your top five. And so I wrote Dallas, 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 Dallas. And so it was very clear to them that I wanted to live in Dallas, and so they transferred me about 2 months after that.
Was it because your brother was involved with sports?
No, actually, I have family here, and so I'd been down a few times, and I knew that as much as I loved living in the Philadelphia area, that I wanted to get to Texas and quality of life and things of that nature. So I was excited to get here and move to Dallas.
Well, since we're on sports, we were talking before the show started that you wrestled in college, but now you play hockey.
Yes.
How did you make that transition?
So I grew up, I grew up in Pennsylvania. So the winters, whenever there was a day of school canceled, it was actually interesting. My mother knew the folks that worked for the park and recreation, so they used to flood the tennis courts in our neighborhood. And so anytime we had a snow day, everybody'd be out there shoveling the snow off the ice so that we could play hockey. So I played mostly pickup growing up. When I moved to Texas and started having children, my son began playing youth hockey. And once he started playing, I got back into it. So I've been playing about 6-7 years now.
Interesting. You moved to Texas, which isn't known necessarily for hockey, and now you're playing hockey.
Yes,
let's go back to what you mentioned about Prudential. Was your intention to go into the insurance field?
Sure.
At that point?
Yeah, so when I graduated college, I had a lot of friends whose fathers or uncles were in the business. And I talked to those folks and really kind of came to understand what made them successful in that business. And as I learned that, I said, well, I can do that. They talked a lot about being able to sell and being able to build relationships with folks. And I felt like those were things that I was good at. Never did I ever imagine that I'd be running a health plan the size of the North Texas health plan for United Healthcare. So really my motivation in the beginning was to get a paying job like most graduating from college. But I think once I learned more about the business and what it is and, how we help people and how it's really about the financing of people's health and their family's health, I became even more engaged in it. And I think that some of the training programs I've been through in the past have really kind of lit the fire underneath that. And so it's really an exciting business to be in. It's not glamorous or doesn't usually get a ton of accolades, but when I see what we do on a daily basis to help folks, it really excites me.
Well, from a global position, when you take a look at what's going on in the world today, healthcare is one of the big subjects that people always talk about.
Absolutely.
So you're right in the middle of that. You had a BA in economics and business administration, which probably helped you move toward insurance. But as you mentioned, you started out more in sales and marketing.
Yes, sir.
So was it a learning curve that you had to get into once you started with Prudential?
Yeah, actually, so in the sales and marketing piece, again, I think a lot of, in the beginning, it was just about, quality of life and maybe the flexible work schedule that most sales folks, regardless of industry, enjoy. And then as I got further into that, I started becoming interested in the management side of it, leading teams, building teams. And to this day, that's really what excites me. So even though my college major helps in the finance piece that I look at pretty much on a daily basis, the reality is I enjoy building, coaching, and helping teams grow.
Well, that probably answers why you stepped down from your role as CEO to go out and work in the field. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So you satisfied yourself by working as a manager in the field,
yes,
working with your team.
And really, to that point, most of my experience at UnitedHealthcare had been in a local market, and I didn't really have a regional or national perspective. And so I think, yes, building teams, working with teams, maybe curing some of the challenges that some of the markets were having, but probably most importantly was to kind of broaden my aspects of the business.
And my guess was, as you came back, what was it, in 2017, you've really broadened your perspective of what's going out in the field, is that correct?
Absolutely. So when you're running a market, like I was prior to moving to the regional job, you kind of think that what you're doing is, and it's not always right or wrong, but that's the only way to do it. And so I think it gives you a perspective of here's a different way to go after things. It also gives you a better perspective of the outside markets, whether it's the brokers that we deal with or the customers. The demands in Chicago are a little bit different than they are in Dallas. So you get a perspective, and some of those things can cross-apply.
Well, you work in the healthcare industry, and as I mentioned, that is one of the things that people have discussion about. In choosing a healthcare plan, what should an individual or even a family take a look at when they're looking at what they need to have to take care of their family?
So it really comes down to three things, Steve. It really comes down to choice, care, and experience. Choice is really looking at the plans, the cost of the plans and the benefits of the plans to make sure that they fit not only the needs for you and your family now, but what you expect over the next year. So first one is choice. The second one is really care. Most folks aren't interested in changing established provider relationships, and quite frankly, where there is an established primary care physician relationship, it's probably not recommendable to change that, right? Because that physician has your history, they kind of know, they know you, they know what you're about, and they kind of know your patterns. So I think the second one is really the care. Make sure it has the providers you need, the urgent care clinic in your neighborhood, your preferred hospital. And then the last is experience. And experience, I think, is where folks probably spend the least amount of time. And experience is around your lifestyle. What's going to help you live a healthier lifestyle? Do they have a weight management program inside of their plan and those sorts of things? Are they technology driven and are you a technology user? So really identifying the experience of the carrier that you're going to choose with the experience that you want to enjoy as a consumer of healthcare.
And obviously UnitedHealthcare has that experience.
Absolutely.
So you help.
I think, one of the things that I'm most proud of at UnitedHealthcare is over the past decade or so, we've really done a lot and invested a lot in the experience piece of it. So I think everybody, to some extent, in order to be an offering, you have to have the first two. And the experience, I think, is really where the rubber meets the road, and it's about meeting the consumer where the consumer wants to be met. And what I mean by that is if you want to be telephonic, which some folks still do, that's great. If you want to be on your handheld device, that's great. If you want to do it via any of the multiple technologies that my kids are on that I know nothing about and social media, you can do that as well. And so I think it's just a matter of meeting the customer where the customer wants to be met in order to enhance that experience.
When many people think about healthcare, they're thinking about the fact that they will pay little or nothing should they have to go to the hospital, see a doctor. But I started off the show by quoting an anonymous author that nothing looks as good as healthy feels. Your business now is more in helping people not have to go to a doctor or hospital. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And keeping them out.
Absolutely.
And keeping them healthy.
Absolutely. I think at the end of the day, when we meet with employers and employers say, I want to drive down the cost of my health insurance, there is no silver bullet, but there's a lot of silver BBs, and one of those silver BBs is really leading your folks to how to live healthier lives. So our mission is to help people live healthier lives, and that really is the only way to kind of curve the or to change the cost curve when it comes to health insurance, which is folks have to take accountability for their lifestyle choices, which are what drives down overall cost. It's what drives down chronic disease and things of that nature. So it's really about helping folks live healthier lives before they get unhealthy. And then probably the second part of that is those that are chronically ill and who those are that are afflicted by disease, how do you get them the most optimal care at the right time so that they can have the best experience possible with something that's already established. So it's really about helping manage what's already existing and then try to prevent more from existing in the future. And that's what we talk to employers about, who's best positioned to do that in the marketplace. And that's it's really a triumvirate of, you know, the consumer, us as the payer, and then really the provider.
So your position is really going into companies now and helping them reduce their costs rather than increase their expense for healthcare.
Yeah, I think the dialogue has changed, Steve. I mean, so, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it was about how do I minimize trend, you know, and how do I get that into the single digits. I think now the dialogue with employers is how do I drive, you know, below the bar today, because it is such a big expenditure. Most employers look at, you know, the percentage that they pay for benefits today versus 10 years ago, and it's probably tripled from a percentage-based standpoint. So it's a big deal. And it's, again, it's not, there's not one answer to it, and they're all customer specific, quite frankly. Not what works for, you know, ABC company may not work for XYZ company because they have different, potentially they have different population makeup.
Well, healthcare costs have been going up a lot over the last few years. Do you see that as a continuing trend? Do you see it subsiding at some point?
You know, subsiding, what I'd say is that there are ways to bend the trend. And that's what employers should stay focused on. And again, one of the ways to bend the trend is really to lead folks down a healthier lifestyle. You know, I'll give you an example. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, UnitedHealthcare began to embed what we call Real Appeal, which is a proven weight loss program. It comes from the folks that that did some of the some of the other big hits that we've seen in America, like Beach Bodies and things of that nature. But really, what it focuses on engaging with consumers who want to be engaged around losing weight. Statistics show that somebody who loses an average of 10 pounds reduces their likelihood of prediabetes and eventually diabetes. So when you think about bending the trend curve or bringing the trend curve back to negative, that's the only way to do it, right, is to take folks who would be a disease state a year or 2 years from now and helping them not become one. And that's what we talk to employers about, which is how do we help you do that? How do we help your consumer or help your employees do that, knowing that not everybody's in the same place at the same time?
Is there anything for your members, especially individuals, to get online?
Absolutely. So through the UnitedHealthcare websites, there's a myriad of information. Probably most importantly is for our members. When they get into myuhc.com, which is our member website, everything that we do is linked from there. And so there's really nothing that they can't access from that website in order to find information about things like Real Appeal, things like virtual visits, which is also a big trend in the industry right now. And so there's a lot of resources out there. Again, it's about meeting folks where they want to be met. So there's folks that want to do that from their handheld. But they can also do that by calling into their member service line and being redirected in the right area for them.
I'm looking at that website right now, which again is myuhc.com, and I just saw something flash by that it's flashing as it's going through. But you can get it on your handheld, and there are tools for you to use as a member of UHC. Let's move on to another subject that is hitting many people that are in the 60-plus range. They're actually about 65, and they're getting into Medicare. Open enrollment's going on right now.
Yes.
Talk about that and what people should do should they have concerns about either what they're paying or getting into it for the first time.
Well, I think at the end of the day, you know, there are lots of resources out there around, you know, how to acquire and how to be part of the Medicare program. I personally don't have responsibility for Medicare, but I know from you know, speaking with you know, Americans that fit into that category, it's really about the same things we just talked about, which is doing the research, making sure that the benefits and the cost meet what you're looking to do, that you have access right to the right care providers. The experience piece, I think, again, is underestimated, but it's something that needs to be considered when trying to choose a Medicare plan.
In addition to the trends we were talking about, especially with keeping your members healthy, any other trends are going out right now in the healthcare industry that listeners might want to know about prior to changing or keeping their current healthcare?
Yep. I think a big one is virtual visits, right? So there are many things that come up in the course of a year, especially if you have children, but not exclusively for those that have children, that you don't need to run to an urgent care or to the doctor's office. And so I think virtual visits is a way to really defer cost and get probably improved, if not at least equal outcomes when it comes to that. And so, for example, United Healthcare has introduced virtual visits into pretty much all of our plans, and that allows a member to actually call, visit online with a physician versus going to an urgent care facility or going to a doctor's office to seek treatment. So it's a great resource. It's a way to save money. Now, certainly, if you have something that's beyond that from a seriousness standpoint, you don't want to be using virtual visits. But virtual visits is a great outlet for a good percentage of what we see showing up at urgent care facilities and physicians' offices.
And that sounds like it's a 21st century's version of a doctor's home visit.
Yep.
Or the closest thing to it.
It's a reverse house call, except you're visiting the physician's house or office in a virtual way.
So. Right, right. Any specific lessons you've learned as a leader that helps you run this organization?
You know, I think the biggest mistake that most leaders make, and it was something that I was conscious of when I moved into a leadership role, is really being overly involved. My general philosophy in leadership is that you've got to hire really good people and compensate them appropriately and let them do their jobs. So one of the things that I started, I don't think it's groundbreaking, but I think it's a discipline that many lack is, I meet with every one of my folks at least monthly, some more often than that, in what we call one-on-ones. And those one-on-ones are not about, what's going on in your business. It's about, what are you doing? How can I help you? And there's not a meeting that I do that I don't end with, how can I help you? And I think that's a refreshing reoccurrence for our folks because I work for them, right? So really, I believe that. It's not just something I say. So my job is to make sure that they're successful. If they're successful, then in turn I'll be successful. So I think that is my general philosophy. And I think my leaders that I work with today or work for today, that they understand that, and then they take the same mode with their teams, and so I think it's a way to make sure that folks are growing and that we're all being successful together.
My next question goes along with this, and you probably answered part of this already. My question is, what does it take to be a great leader? But before you answer that, let's go back to when you were wrestling in school. You were coached. To be a great athlete, you need to have a great coach. Even in the non-athletic world, you need a great coach at some time. So my question is, what does it take to be a great leader, and did you learn much from the coaches that you had when you were in athletics in school?
Well, I'm not sure I would put myself in the great leader category, but I think the great leaders I've seen and that I've observed and I've read about in history, I think they all had a high level of humility. They were willing to kind of put their own egos aside and say, maybe I am wrong, or maybe this is the right way to do it. And I think, again, going along the humility line, it's about, if every idea has to come from the leader, then an organization most likely is going to fail. And so the leader has to be willing to kind of be an active listener, put their ego aside and have some humility in order to do that. When I think back of great coaches I've had it over my athletic career, and not so great coaches, I think what separates them is kind of a similar characteristic, right? Which is, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help make you better. It's not about me as a coach. It's about our team, or it's about, helping you as an athlete succeed. And I'm going to do what I need to do to help you do that. And the hard thing I think about that, why some don't want to do that, is that requires you to really know your team, know your players, just like it forces you to know your employees and know that they're all different. And so what motivates one person is not going to motivate the next. And I think that's what great coaches do. They know how to get the most out of the team they have and the players they have, and that's what makes them successful.
I believe Jimmy Johnson said when he was coaching the Dallas Cowboys, in his background of psychology, I treat every one of the players exactly the same, all differently.
Right.
What's been your greatest challenge?
I think that the greatest challenge that we've really had is around making sure that we have a deep talent pool of the right folks. And it's something that we talk about monthly with the team is, I encourage our folks to have what we call a three deep strategy. So you need to be three deep and, who's going to replace somebody if they were promoted or moved on. And that's tough. We do have some things working on in the community, especially with some of the local universities around how we can continue to build that talent pool. But I think that's a challenge in our industry. There's not a plethora of folks who are just sitting out there, trying to get into to what we do. And so, again, that's something that We always talk about kind of eliminating the gap between when somebody starts and when somebody stops and when somebody starts. And quite frankly, we've been pretty successful at that. But every time you promote somebody or move somebody, that creates another gap. So I think that has probably been our biggest challenge, is really recruiting in a diverse talent pool of, if we all think and look and act exactly the same, we probably won't be successful either. So having a diverse talent pool of not like-minded thinkers to kind of tap upon when we do have change. And fortunately for us, most of our change has been around people moving to bigger and better jobs, which is a great, I think, testament to my leaders, and that what they've been able to do is really kind of build folks that other parts of the organization want, which is a good thing.
Then what I'm hearing is you have turnover. The turnover is that you have people moving up. Absolutely. And creating additional openings.
Absolutely.
Where you need to fill them with some good people.
Yep.
So what I hear you say is that you are looking for anybody that is motivated, that wants to learn this business and wants to become successful.
Absolutely.
It sounds like you hire more for their attitude and their humility rather than their skill set.
Absolutely. Give me somebody who knows how to work hard and sacrifice. And we can teach them the insurance business. They have to have obviously an interest in being in the business, but I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to the attitude and the work ethic in order to be successful in our business. Knowing that, like now, is a really busy time of the year. The majority of our business renews on 1/1, so you've got to be willing, and the team that's out there that you walked by on your way in, they're willing to do what they need to do to be successful, and know that there'll be a little bit of a downtime come the new year, but right now is the time when the majority of our customers need us.
For many of your people, they're really in business for themselves. They're not waiting for someone to tell them what to do. They have business, and they need to keep working it.
Absolutely. So again, going back to the leadership pieces, you need to empower your folks. You need to be able to coach them. You need to be able to be a resource. You need to serve for them. But at the end of the day, for the most part, they're kind of running their own franchises when it comes to their block of business or their sales goals. And so our job is to make sure that we can make them successful. Obviously, we have the checks and balances that any large organization has to make sure that folks are doing it the right way. But at the end of the day, it's really about self-motivation, getting out and getting the job done.
Should someone have interest in United Healthcare, how should they find out more about it? Should they talk to a broker? Should they go to your website? What should they do first?
So we do have a website, unitedhealthcare.com, and then go to jobs. And so it'll list the openings. One of the great things about United Health Group is we're such a diverse organization. So we have the benefit side of our business, which is United Healthcare, who I work for, and then we have the services side of the business, which is Optum, all under the United Health Group umbrella. So there's really nothing in the healthcare industry that doesn't fall under those two organizations. And so when you're on our job site, you'll see what we have open in the area and nationally for folks to be interested in. So it's, again, I've been here 17 years. It is a great organization. I don't see myself ever being anywhere else but United Health Group.
How about for people that would like to become a member or need to check out your services?
Yeah, so the majority, like I said earlier, the majority of what we do is through employers, and so we sell to the employer group. So I'd say that, encourage your employer to be part of United Healthcare. Obviously, we have the Medicare block of business, and there's Medicaid available. The individual business has changed dramatically over the past year or so. But again, it's really through the employer-sponsored plans majority.
And what's the main website they should check to begin this process?
It's the same one, unitedhealthcare.com.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, Scott, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. A playmaker term comes from soccer. It's the one that person that makes something happen, and you're obviously making something happen here. Congratulations.
Great. Thank you, Steve.
We are speaking with Scott Flannery. Scott is CEO of United Healthcare Employer and Individual Operations in North Texas and Oklahoma. This has been a terrific show. Thank you all for listening to us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.